cliffcentral.com.
So my buddy's telling me she had, she remembers a dance version of this song, huh?
The electronic dance version. That was re-released.
Didn't it sound exactly like this version?
It was just sped up.
It's one of those. I think this even predates me in some way, but not the song, but that whole movement. When did they release this song? Anyway, I don't know. Fleetwood Mac and Everywhere. But we'd have some old school this morning. Justice Malala is here, and he's going to help us understand this very, very complicated and increasingly interesting world of politics in which we thrive, survive, or eke out our existences. Some of us better than others. Huh?
Yeah. No, nothing.
What were you going to say?
No, it's fine.
You sure?
Yep.
Okay, let's get straight into it. Let's not waste a second. He's even got newspapers, something I haven't seen in a long time.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
How are you, Justice?
Very good, very good. I've got newspapers because I've got notes. Huh?
Oh.
I've got notes. I've actually got facts and figures and stuff.
You have That's got fantastic. So much to talk about this morning. Let's start off with something that everybody was talking about. There was that horrible bus accident over the weekend, and a lot of people were very, very sad about the 11 people who died. It interested me that the ANC was busing people in from Katlehong all the way to PE. Now, I mean, you really have to, search high and low if you have to go all the way to Katlehong to get people to fill a stadium in PE.
You know, there was a time when the ANC only had to nod and they would fill up that stadium. That stadium is not a massive capacity stadium. It's only 46,000, capacity. But,
Gwede said they wanted 100,000.
Zizi.
Was it Zizi?
They both said it. Oh. Both of them.
Okay.
Gwede Mantashe said it on Friday.
No.
It said it on Friday. Zizi had been saying it all week in the run-up.
Uh-huh.
Other leaders had been saying it. If you think about it, Nelson Mandela Bay, the former PE, the Eastern Cape, this is where the ANC didn't in the past have to even, you know, lift a finger to get 46,000 people into a stadium. So that's the first thing. So you say we have the stadium, but we're going to have overflow areas because there'll be so many people that, you know, people can't just get into the stadium. So we're going to provide for them to listen on screens and so forth.
Hmm.
Saturday didn't turn out to be that way at all. So President Zuma was supposed to speak at 11 a.m., but they waited and waited and waited for the stadium to fill up, and it didn't. So by about 1 o'clock, we think we've got 42,000 people in the stadium. That was Baleka Mbete making the announcement. As you know, Baleka Mbete will become our president if she has her way.
Yes.
So you have to start wondering what is going on when the ANC says we're going to shock and awe the country and show just, you know, all this talk about PE being on the brink and so forth. Maybe the ANC is absolutely, totally out of touch with reality. Maybe it doesn't see what is in front of it. If you think about the 2004 national election,
yes,
the ANC got 70%.
Yeah.
In 2006, it got 66% in 2006 in the local government elections. So there was a 4 percentage point drop in its support. By 2014, the ANC was down to 48.5%. So this is not looking good at all for the ANC, and the numbers are not looking great. So if Saturday is any measure whatsoever, I think we should expect a very hard-fought election, but we should also expect some big upsets for the ANC. An Ipsos Machino poll was done towards the end of last year. It showed that the ANC had 43% support, 42% by the rest of the opposition,
mm-hmm.
And the rest of the people were undecided. If that trend continues, there's going to be some serious horse trading on August 4 or 5 when the results come in from PE. But the bottom line is that there has been a lot of talk about, oh, can't you see we filled up the stadium and so forth and so forth. Brothers and sisters, let's be honest here. The ANC is in trouble. The ANC is going to get a beat.
No.
Without a shadow of doubt, you can say whatever you like.
Sorry, that was Grede. He does that. Grede comes in and says that every now and then.
I can tell you now, there was a beautiful picture of Grede, by the way, that was doing the rounds of him blowing a kiss to all of us. Between that and the no. But, you know, I mean, if the ANC doesn't realize just how much trouble it's in PE, you have to start thinking deep and hard about other parts of South Africa. You have to start thinking about other metros. And I think the ANC needs to get its world-famous election machinery, because the ANC can bring together an election machinery without – it's the best machine in this country. But if people don't like what you're doing, if people don't like your leader, you may find even the most money doesn't help you to get anywhere.
Justice, what did you make of that Sunday Times article where they allege that they have been in connection with some ANC leaders who revealed a plot that apparently after August the 3rd, they will remove the president? They just don't want to do it now because it would cause a lot of instability.
What did
you?
I
Yeah, someone said something at a funeral or something.
Yeah, I wasn't convinced by that report. I'm more convinced by a report that was written by a journalist who sometimes comes in and does analysis here on the show, and that's Ranjani Munusami.
Mm-hmm.
Ranjani wrote a fantastic piece which I thought takes the story about President Zuma and his troubles a little bit further than anyone else has. The story about, oh, people are getting together, they're talking about removing Zuma and so forth, has been around for a long time. The problem with it is that people write these stories but don't say who exactly would be having this conversation and just how much support. So the problem is we could sit here and there's three of us. Let's say Ben was here and there would be four of us. And we talk, but the four of us need to be talking about this. If it's just me and Mabale, then it becomes one half. So we can talk as much as we like, but come August 4, August 5, and we don't have the numbers, then it's a totally different.
Then it meant nothing.
It meant nothing.
Yeah.
So I think reporting what the minority in the NEC and the top six is talking about without saying, actually, for them to have any kind of traction, it needs to be a majority play, then it's a different thing. But the interesting story about Ranjani's story on Daily Maverick was that it said, yes, there's a conversation about President Zuma going, but there's another conversation that says, oh, you want to get rid of President Zuma? Try it. Let's see if this majority that he has doesn't say, we don't like the ANC that you're talking about. So either you leave or we leave.
Right.
Now for me, that is a scenario that is very, very powerful, because it says, who's got the bigger cojones here? Is it, if you say, oh, we're going to get rid of President Zuma after August 3, and then you arrive and he says, yeah, go ahead, but look at the people I've got. And it's more than, it's 60% of the ANC. Get rid of me and you will be left with essentially what is a cope in 2009.
Right.
And what happens there is that those people, that those conversationalists start backing down.
Right.
And so there you have President Zuma once again, Western commander in charge.
And we know he's got the cojones. Right.
He's got the cone. Look, think about it. He doesn't have anything to lose. The other people know that there was a beautiful, and you speak about Guedemantashe. On that Friday, 7:20 PM, he was late. President Zuma stands up and says, I'm going to not resign. And everyone says, oh, it's great. He's not resigning. 8 PM, Guedemantashe has a press conference, and he said, you're asking, when people said, why aren't you recalling President Zuma? He said, you're asking the ANC to tear itself apart. He might have a conversation about President Zuma going. Other people might have it. But when push comes to shove, he doesn't want the ANC to break apart. Do you think President Zuma would have such qualms? No.
No, he would care less about tearing
the ANC
apart.
He would say, okay, slash and burn. Let's see.
Right.
Timing.
Sure.
And so that scenario, for me, is the scenario where essentially the KwaZulu-Natal province of the ANC, with the biggest number of members, with the most populous province, will say, okay, we are standing with President Zuma.
Sure.
And so you have an ANC that is huge and massive that is built around KwaZulu-Natal and maybe Mpumalanga, bits of the Free State, Northwest. And if you're Cyril Ramaphosa, if you're Gwede Mantashe, if you're all these other people, I'm telling you now, I don't think they have the cojones
so
to challenge that.
Is it safe to say that you have some people within the party who are thinking, stomach him now, he won't be forever, for the good of the party?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That for me is what Gwede Mantashe was saying on that Friday. That, you know what, I'm not prepared to be the one who will be remembered as the Secretary General who oversaw the walkout, not just the walkout, but the essentially this won't be a split. In fact, not a split. What's happened with COPE and say maybe Julius Malema's EFF has been a splinter of the ANC. This one will be
a cleaving, 40,
60.
Yeah.
It will be a cleaving. It will be a split
of
a 104-year-old movement. None of them want to do that.
Yeah.
Does Jacob Zuma have the same considerations? I don't think so.
Probably not.
So he'll stare them down.
Well, let's talk about Jacob Zuma for a second, because there was a story that a lot of people just kind of, you know, they rolled their eyes at and moved on. But you think it might warrant special attention. This issue of the president and the defense minister who went under the radar and unveiled a military-industrial complex in Saudi Arabia last month.
Yeah, first
of all, we're spending a lot of time in the Middle East at the moment, aren't we?
Indeed. For me, the big story there and the big concern was President Zuma goes on a state visit to Saudi Arabia. We are told that, we strengthen relations. The presidency, the Department of the Ministry of International Relations, they issue all these pictures and releases, and it's, here's my hand, and, it's fantastic, and, standing next to each other.
Meet and greet.
It's all meet and greet, men in suits, men in lovely Saudi Arabia clothing, and it's like, fantastic, we're strengthening relations.
Right.
Only a week later, week and a half later, do we see pictures emanating from the Middle East saying, here's a picture of President Zuma, cutting a ribbon with the defense minister of this or that of Saudi Arabia. And suddenly we find out, okay, I didn't know about this. Did you know that there was a massive cooperation agreement with a massive complex where we are manufacturing arms with Saudi Arabia?
No.
No. By the way, you're a woman. You can't drive in Saudi Arabia. I just thought I'd put it out there. Anyway, so these are the kinds of regimes that we are building arms with. Okay?
It's a problem.
We're building arms with these people, and we're keeping it secret from the ordinary South African.
The people who are paying for those arms.
Who are paying for those arms. So what we have here is a secretive presidency, a secretive foreign affairs ministry, a secretive ministry of defense, which says, we are building relations and we are doing deals with regimes that cut people's heads off. I just want to put it out there that I don't mind us building arms or manufacturing arms with people and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it being kept secret from me and you and every South African out there? It's absolutely outrageous. And I think the worst thing is that we are not making a song and dance about the fact that our presidency, our ministries, Malusi Gigaba, who was in those pictures, none of them said a word. They didn't say a word.
No one's talking.
How is this possible? So I think the South African taxpayer needs to be told these things. If we're going to have an arms deal or some kind of scandal, at least let's just say we knew about it. But right now, we don't know about it. I mean, this is, it's outrageous. It's shocking.
A lot of people are saying that we need to make more black babies.
No, not a lot of people.
Julius.
Not a lot of people.
Julius is saying, do we not have enough babies? Black babies?
Yeah, you know, I just think it's such a sad thing for that to be said by a leader about... it's just sad for him, for his message, for his everything, for his party to be saying all this stuff. He said it before when he was in the ANC Youth League, by the way. But I thought we should take what he said and take what Stats SA said this week about the state of South African youth. Young people in this country are just in trouble. They don't have jobs. They don't have so many young people don't have any prospects whatsoever. I mean, it's shocking. Listen to this. I'm going to quote from the Business Day. It says, take employment. In 2014, a little more than 6 million South Africans between 15 and 34 years old were employed, down about 31,000 from 5 years ago. I'm reading the wrong bit. Even if you isolate just the 24-year-olds, as I've said, only one in three people has a job.
So if you're under the age of what, 20?
25, between 25 and 34.
If you're under the age of 25 in this country, you are not going to be able, you're in a one in three chance of finding a job.
Yeah. No, only one, yes. Only one in three. Yeah. In 2014, about 5 million South Africans were unemployed, and young people make up about three quarters of that unhappy group. Mm. So for me, when you say, oh God, let's make black babies, my thing is, what are you saying about education? What are you saying about opportunity? You know, it's not about, oh, look, we've got so many people. It's, look, we've got so many educated, happy, employed people with a horizon. Mm. When you go out and say all this kind of idiotic stuff, what you're saying is, you know what? Those young people, think about what's happening today or what happened yesterday in Zandspruit. In Zandspruit, it was young people who don't have jobs who are out on the street. And you know what? What happens in those situations is that they keep on walking out and protesting and protesting. Before you know it, you have a full-on escalation of hostilities between the haves and the have-nots. You have a war, and those are the people who become child soldiers. It's like, think a little bit harder. Think a little bit harder. The Stats SA survey that came out this week was just damning. You know, in the past 6-7 years, since 2009, the state of learning, the state of education for young people has become, essentially, it says that if you are around 20 years ago, you'd be better skilled than you would be, we'd have upskilled you in the past 7 years. Wow. It's a shocker. But we say, oh, the solution to that is go ahead.
Make more people.
Make more babies. It's sad. It's miserable.
It's not a solution.
It's irresponsible. And, you know, what really, really gets to me is when leaders of the EFF, instead of saying, you know what, it was the heat of the moment, we are sorry, they say, oh, yes, oh, no, no, defend the CIC. Defend him.
Yeah, do us a favor.
Really.
All right. What else is on your mind, though? Because that's obviously something that I think a lot of people are worried about. So I'm glad you brought it up.
I'm also incensed. Okay, I'm incensed by the fact that at Rhodes University, I'll tell you, I don't want to again. You know, I mean, I know I look young and I look handsome and I look beautiful and all.
Of course
that.
You do. Yeah.
But when I was at university. A long time ago.
Okay.
I want to tell you, it was a long time ago. Let's just say Sia wasn't even a twinkle, okay, in his parents' eye. He wasn't a twinkle. But, you know, I remember exactly the same issue at the University of Cape Town coming up. The same issue came up in 1989. at the University of Cape Town.
Sexual harassment and rape.
Sexual harassment and
1989.
And it wasn't the only campus. It was also on other campuses. I cannot believe that here I am in 2016. Women have to take their clothes off to make the point that, no, not about rape, about the fact that the university's reaction to these things. When you arrive and say, this man assaulted me, this man couldn't make up his, didn't understand that a no means a no. You're told, do you realize what a life you're destroying? What about the woman? What about that this debate, if it's a debate at all, is still going on? It's not political. I think it's societal. We need to just stop and say, what are we doing in this country? When in 2016, young women have to be, and then, you know, the reaction, they are shot at.
Yeah, by police.
The vice chancellor only comes out now. How many, this campaign is not new. And this campaign is not something that it's been around. I've seen it on Twitter, da da da. But only now. And then when they do actually go out, we say, I'm going to shoot you. And we do.
You know, when you mention 1989, what that says to me is, how else do you expect people to react when they are fed up with something?
Exactly, exactly.
Women are fed up in this country. Now, how do you want women to be fed up? Do you want us to be fed up in single file, all civilized,
yes,
talking calmly to you? No, we are fed up.
Exactly.
A person who gets fed up reacts.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you see, it's almost like societally, it's, you know, there's a very patronizing reaction where it's part of these responses by the university that, men get away with, it's okay. No, you're going to destroy his life, so just let it go. Or this or that or that.
But does that happen? I mean, do we know the facts of this at this stage?
We know the facts. We know the fact that 22 reports of rape made to UCT, and we've got chapter and verse on the institution's reaction to it. And part of it, if at Cliff Central there is a rule that, okay guys, this is what happens when we, it's the organizational culture. If you arrive at university office and you say, look, I need to report this, and they say, why don't you go and think about it? Or actually, there isn't anyone to take your statement right now. Can you come back tomorrow? What does it mean? If you've been raped, it means you've got, that person probably didn't use protection, that you probably have semen, whatever it might be. And someone says, come back tomorrow.
You can't.
So the organization hasn't set itself up.
But the university shouldn't be investigating rape. The police should be.
There should be. But that most universities know that there's a problem. So there's a rape crisis where it would be a safe space for you to go and talk about these things. But that also is an issue, that if you go to a police station, that you get the same kind of thing.
Mm.
And if I send my child to Grahamstown to be a student, I'm hoping that actually the Grahamstown police would be much better at these things than they are. It seems as if they are not.
Mm.
And so,
because the university, all they can do is expel someone. They can't lay charges on your behalf.
Exactly. No, they can't. But my view, and continues to be my view, is that university needs to say, zero tolerance here. Your parents sent you here, or your scholarship and your bursary. If you don't play by the rules, you will be out. But I don't think that's it.
No, look, I don't think anyone can disagree with you. My only concern is that there's a lot of blurring of the lines, and I want to play devil's advocate for a second and see what you think. There are a lot of these movements, these social justice warriors movements, that are equating the term of rape to any kind of slightly chauvinistic behavior. Like, let's say, for example, that you comment on some girl's outfit and she accuses you of be, you know, rape culture. Let's not say rape, but contributing to rape culture. And it sort of waters down the very serious nature of rape. And you put out lists of people's names on social media without evidence or police charges being laid or any of that stuff. Surely that's dangerous behavior that does this movement no good.
That is very dangerous behavior, and I think it shouldn't be allowed. On the other hand, I do think that culpability and responsibility for what is happening should not just be put on the activists. That, okay, they put the names of Justice Malala and so on social media. When my daughter, when your sister, when my cousin, my nephew goes, my niece goes and reports a crime that has happened, and she gets these kinds of responses, these kinds of documented responses from authority, from the police, from the university itself, then I think we shouldn't be surprised when people take essentially the law into their hands. I'm not for lynching. No. I'm not for men being altered by this. But when our system fails us, we must acknowledge that if it was my daughter, if it was my niece who has been violated in this manner, and she gets no...
But here's who we should be angry with. The police.
The police, the government, we should be.
We should not be angry with the... I mean, a university is primarily... I'm not saying that they don't have any responsibility, but it's primarily a place of learning. When I went there, all I wanted was to not be killed and to be able to study.
And if you're a woman or a man...
And if you're a woman, you don't want to be violated by other students. Right?
Exactly.
Particularly if you stay in residence.
Exactly. Right. And I think that becomes an issue for the university, because it's not just about the learning. It's also about creating the right environment for you to learn. But
we have a criminal justice system, and it is the responsibility of that system
It can be left alone. One of the things, I never thought about this, but one of the things at Leo Marquardt Hall at UCT when I was there was that, you know, where do you go and have a drink? It's the cockpit. Mm. And so you go in there and you start thinking, the culture was very macho. The culture was very much a kind of like, oh. And now the debate we're having, by the way, it's not just a South African debate or a Rhodes debate.
No, it's all
over the world. The US in America, and so forth. Yeah. And if you think about what happens in the US, what has happened in the US, is that you arrive and you're expected to take part in these traditional kind of things. And many of them actually put so much pressure on young women.
Yeah, it's these patriarchal, very oppressive.
Yeah, but also if this jocular, happens to you, you're not coming to the party. Right. I think that's hugely problematic. And I think it's something to think about at universities. I'm all for having fun. I'm big for having fun. Mm. But I think we have to think through some of the things that happen and whether they are conducive or that they encourage some of these things.
I feel as though we are also getting trapped in focusing on the wrong thing. We are now focusing on how female students are reacting to the situation and questioning that. That is not the issue. The issue is that in this country, when a woman gets raped on a daily basis, there is no place that she can go to that helps her deal with it properly. Mm. She goes to the police and she gets treated a certain way. Right. She reports it to the university. Nothing gets done about it. What you're essentially saying to women in this country is that when you get raped, you are on your own and you must just deal with it. And then what you're also saying is that I must just be happy to deal with it on my own. Well, guess what? I'm not happy to deal with it on my own. I am now going to make it your problem, and I'm going to make it look ugly, and I don't care that you don't like how it looks.
Right.
And I think that's... you know what?
To get to this point is very sad.
There's no care here. There are 66,000 reports, okay? 66,000 reports of sexual violations to the SAPS every year.
And you said it yourself, it's societal, because most of those are within the knowledge of, I mean, that's usually the perpetrator is known to the victim.
Of those reports, you know, probably about 5,000 will get convictions.
How many?
5,000.
Out of 60,000?
So after the 66,000 reported. As far as I can remember, we can check this with Sonke Jan.
Well, that's the problem. That's the issue at hand.
Less than 10%.
That is less than 10%. And if you're a woman, a friend of mine was raped on Monday. She was on the stand for 6 hours.
Oh my God.
And the perpetrator was sitting there saying, oh, you know, she said yes. And for me, it seems as if the burden is on her to prove and the state isn't helping. I think we have a societal problem here. I think we have a big, big problem, and what's happening at Rhodes is just
a symptom of the bigger problem.
Just how sick it is.
And the saddest thing is that it is a symptom that is being dealt or that is inflicted on young people. These are millennials. These are still kids. Somebody mentioned the other day when he phoned in, and he said, you know, we also forget that these are kids that are dealing with these issues at university.
They are kids.
Well, we've got a lot to answer for as a country, really. To our own people, forget about indeed. Anyone else. Now, just quickly, because we've got a little bit of time still. What is the point of the Youth League and the Women's League? What are the ANC Youth League and the ANC Women's League actually there for? I mean, talk about patronizing and sexist. Do we have a Women's League just so that we can have the women feel like they're part of this and they can rubber stamp the decisions that all the men make? I mean, Batabile Dlamini breaking down in tears because genuinely she's probably caught between a rock and a hard place, and she realizes people don't like the position that the Women's League or that the ANC have taken on a lot of issues in PE. Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't about that. It was because they were saying she likes expensive whiskey from the clips that I saw.
Right.
Which is also embarrassing. Don't complicate this now. This is about whiskey and whether it's expensive or not.
All right. I got you. So you cry about it when you're confronted with this by poor people.
I drink Glenfiddich. My clan failure. Lack of willing is my triple rather. I'm interested in these two organizations because, you know, Colin Maine went to the offices of ANN7 yesterday. ANN7, people will know, our listeners will know, that it's the television stations owned by the Gupta family. The New Age newspaper is the newspaper owned by the Gupta family. Mm-hmm. It gets a lot of advertising, although no one reads it. Show me one person. Sia, do you read the New Age?
Nobody does. Sia, do you?
It really isn't up there as my must-reads now.
Flex, you don't read the New Age?
No way.
You know, the only place I see it is where it's handed out for free.
Exactly. But, you know, it
like
doesn't...
Unlike on airplanes that Dudu Mieni organizes, or in places like government departments where it's lying around the whole time.
Yeah. So when we talk about theft of taxpayers' money, you know, the government advertises more into the New Age, which doesn't have any certificate of authentication, mm-hmm. As in the ABC, the Audit Bureau of Circulation, saying, oh, you guys, you sell 80,000 papers into the market. The Sowetan, which has an ABC certificate, gets less advertising from government than this newspaper, whose readership is
minuscule. We can guarantee it's very small.
Yeah. Anyway, so what happens with Colin Maine is that he pitches up. Mm-hmm. Now, you'll remember that Mr. Maine has a bond, and the bond is with the Bank of India. Many people say Mr. Maine seems to have got the bond through the offices of a family that used to live in Saxonwold, that is currently holidaying in Dubai, that is currently about to have a big wedding in Turkey, and says it's coming back to South Africa, boom, to live in Durban. Guess who? So he suddenly decides, I'm going to be with the workers at these companies, and I'm going to be with them to petition APSA and all the other banks who've said we're no longer banking there Gupta companies. And I'll be with them. He thinks he's being a hero, you know, fighter for the workers. He gets there. They say, what do you want here? We've been crying and complaining about this for months and weeks and years and about the conditions, and it's terrible here. What do you want here? And they ran him out of town, and he has to leave.
And he thought he'd at least have a soft landing at ANN7.
Well, he thought he'd get his picture on the front page of ANN, of the New Age, I think. But it didn't work out. So for me, it's what has become of the ANC Women's League, which now seems to be the Jacob Zuma Protection Society. What has become of the ANC Youth League, which has now become the foot soldiers of the Jacob Zuma Protection Society? What has happened to the ANC Veterans League, which now seems to be Kebi Mapatswe and, you know, his microphone so that he can defend President Zuma? These leagues no longer exist, as, you know, we will... Well, have you heard Colin Maynes say anything about the Stats SA figures this week?
He doesn't even know they released figures.
They're about his constituency. Oh, maybe not, because he's over 35. Nah.
No, his constituency is making sure the president's happy.
Exactly.
His constituency is one man.
And that is a big problem, because these are organizations that are supposed to be fighting for these particular issues. The ANC Women's League, you know, that's a big issue with what's going on.
They did pitch for the Oscar Pistorius trial. Let's, you know,
And then they did the slip of the tongue where they asked for Steenkamp to be jailed.
Yeah. And then they also did that thing. Angie Mosheha made a speech a while ago now, but it still stands, that, you know, she's spoken to the guys, and maybe it is time for a woman. But she had to get their permission first, and then quickly they spun it afterwards. You remember.
She had to double check with the men.
She had to check with her boss, the man.
With Ubaba.
Outrageous for a woman to think for herself. What?
Now, speaking about people thinking for themselves, was this a real publicity move on the part of Alan Gray, or was it a very clever move by Nhlanhla Nene into the private sector as a non-executive director at Alan Gray, a man who really was treated very unfairly?
He was treated very shabbily, very, very badly. But the key thing for me is, you remember that Q&A session in Parliament earlier this year?
Yeah, the president was asked, what is he going to do? And he said, oh, no, he's going for a very important job at the BRICS Bank.
Exactly.
That turns out to have been a complete lie.
So what are we going to do? What are we going to do exactly? Because the president lied, and he's maintained the lie, even in the face of no job at BRICS Bank. You know, Nhlanhla Nene still hasn't had a call saying, come for the interview.
Yeah.
Or come and...
He said he knows nothing about this BRICS Bank job.
He knows nothing about this thing. But no, just like, it's okay. It's okay. I mean, what are we going to do? The president just makes it up.
Surely lying in Parliament is like lying in court. There must be consequences.
There must be consequences, and I think we should know about those. So, you know, the Nhlanhla Nene appointment, good for him. He's going to be on the board of Alan Gray, and I'm sure he'll give them a lot of value. He's, by all accounts, a fantastic finance brain, and he did a pretty good job as finance minister. He did a very good job as deputy finance minister. He was a very good chair of the finance committee when he was in parliament. So this is a guy with a fantastic pedigree. He's a decent human being.
But unfortunately for all of us in this country, a loss of someone so competent to the private sector is not a good thing for the public sector.
It's not a great thing at all for the public sector. We need people like that staying in government and serving. But clearly, President Zuma didn't think so. So he's deploying him to the BRICS Bank. But there is no BRICS Bank job because those posts are being filled.
And then finally, Justice, from the 7th of May until the 17th of May, we've got some exciting things happening when the president goes to Parliament again to answer more questions.
Oh, dear.
So what should we expect?
I'm not ready for another one of those.
All I'm saying is with this one, make a date. I think May 17 is a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Get some popcorn. Get some drinks. Set your television set to a channel that's going to take this stuff live. President Jacob Zuma is going to Parliament.
All right, thank you, Justice.
It's going to be fun. Expect fireworks.
Thank you very much. Another exciting episode of the Burning Platform. Every week with Justice Malala, we get into all the big issues. We managed to talk through a lot this morning. And if you have any questions, you can always email me, or you can email Justice, and I'll forward it to him if you email it to me. And we will keep the Burning Platform on Thursdays, hot as ever, just for you, right here on cliffcentral.com.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.